slaves of oppression. For the tyrants fear your might. Don't cling so hard to your possessions, for you have nothing if you have no rights. Let race this ignorance be.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing, and joining us now is Nina Kusheva, who's a professor in the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow of the World Policy Institute. She's also an editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate, Association of Newspapers Around the World. She served as a deputy editor for the East European Constitutional Review at NYU School of Law and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and the author of Imagining Nabokov, Russia Between Art and Politics, and is currently working on a book, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. Welcome to Background Briefing, Nina Kusheva.
Thank you.
And Nina, you're just back from Moscow, and of course the elections just took place, followed by fairly substantial demonstrations. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I mean, it has been brewing for the last year or so. Since 2010, Russians have started organizing and getting to the streets in very small numbers comparing to other countries, so in the hundreds. And actually, when I was in Moscow about a week ago, there was a demonstration against right pre-election, sort of against Putin and his party, United Russia. And the debate was whether it's going to be 500 or whether it was 500 or 1,000. So it's very heartening to know that yesterday there was a demonstration and protests. Over 10,000 people came to the streets.
So what is the constituency that's left? If obviously his Putin's United Russia Party didn't win the 50% votes, which of course is a good thing in the sense that you actually have a real parliament, not a rubber stamp. I mean, so he's down from the 64% of 4 years ago. But he's been doing this kind of revolving door with Medvedev, and he was recently booed and jeered at a martial arts bout. How anecdotal is that? I mean, where does his support remain? Because my understanding is, somewhat depressingly, is that the young people under 25 seem to be the most loyal to the regime. Is that your understanding?
Yeah. Not, I mean, some of them, but a lot of them, actually, the young below 25, are basically bought by the Putin regime. I mean, there's the national movement, and there's a lot of other patriotic movements that the government supports and pays them for their loyalty. So I wouldn't really be convinced that they're genuinely, these are the people that are very loyal to Putin. Some of them are. Some of them still kind of in the mode of 2000, you know, from 2010, that he's a guarantor of a strong and stable nation. But that has waned away. I mean, that whole conviction, because corruption is very rampant. And in fact, most of the corrupt officials of the United Russia Party Representative Police is incredibly, incredibly corrupt. So there is some support going on, just because there is no really, over the many opposition groups and many opposition leaders, there's really nobody who the Russians believe can step in and actually lead the country to something better, which I'm not even sure the Russians know what better is, in the sense that what they want is that so the police wouldn't harass them. But not necessarily that they would have more freedoms the way it's usually understood. Or, for example, let's have free press or free TV. I don't know how much that is a priority. So that contradiction between Putin's argument of a stable nation and whatever Russians see in the streets, which the courts are corrupt, police is corrupt, so all these things that really affect very ordinary Russians. But, you know, I don't know if it's you said that it's not going to be a rubber stamp parliament. I'm not really sure, because the opposition parties that got in, I mean, they're arguing opposition, but they've been in the parliament before, and know that they were really opposing United Russia that much. So I think the vote of no confidence is that even with remarkably rigged elections, remarkably stuffed bulletins, remarkably completely harassed monitors or officials who were supposed to oversee that the elections were fair, he still was unable to get even 50%. So that is a stunning blow to the regime.
So Nina Khrushcheva, looking forward to the presidential elections, Boris Nemtsov, the opposition founder of the People's Freedom Party, he's arguing and he's trying to create a political party under the slogan "None of the Above," the goal of which is to bring the number of voters rejecting all candidates to 40%. And of course, if that happens under the Constitution, the elections will have to be declared invalid. Is there some traction for his ideas in the electorate?
Well, there is some traction. I mean, all these ideas sort of have some supporters. But the reason I think this is not a viable alternative, not that there is a viable alternative altogether, is that if they're going to rig the election, it's irrelevant that we mark all of the above and reject all of the above, because the bulletins are going to come in with Putin marked as president. So I think that is not, because the elections are such a farce, I don't think that even we should be even discussing how we are going to vote or not vote. I think the solution, as it was after the elections, 10,000 people went to the street. When the cortege of Putin or his flunkies are blocking Moscow traffic for 6 hours, what are we doing sitting in our cars? Get out of the car, block the traffic. So really do something to show the regime that it's invalid, that we don't want it, we don't like it. But, you know, discussing how we are going to pretend that the elections are fair, they're not fair. They're not going to be fair. So it's almost irrelevant what we do during the elections, I mean.
Again, I'm speaking with Nina Khrushcheva, professor of the Graduate Program of International Affairs at the New School and senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. She's the author of a new book, which she's working on, The Lost Khrushchev, A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. But it would seem that there are two kind of Russias in a way, the Russia of the brainwashed Russians watching state TV, and the Russians on the internet. And apparently, there's night and day in terms of information. What's your sense of how much the people who are informing themselves via the internet are a growing force?
Well, I mean, it seems like it was a bit growing force, and I don't know, because Russians are generally cynical. They're usually waiting for. Very rarely the revolutions happen there, and they happen there horrible, bloody, and the Russians are genuinely afraid of those, and therefore they tend to be complacent for a very, very long time. So the internet was like Russian literature before. It was a venting device rather than really call for protests and opposition. And I think it really changed in the last 2 weeks. I think it started changing very radically since September, when on the 24th Putin announced that he's going to become new president and turn Medvedev into his prime minister. And I think that really was such a slap in everybody's face. I think Putin made, I don't know whoever advised him, and actually we do know who advises him, made an amazing, remarkably bad strategic mistake. They should have kept it very close to the vest until the last minute. And that's when the public would not have had enough time to organize. But now, as of September, you know, it really became clear that it is such a sham of a president, it's a sham of a prime minister, it's a sham of a state. And so the internet was gaining momentum, although before it was, as I said, a venting device more than anything else. And in fact, on the 4th, when the elections happened, just last Sunday, and there was a call, Nemtsov, in fact, called for a protest, a big protest on the 5th on Monday, a lot of internet social media postings were, are we going to vent on the online, or are we actually physically going to go to the protest? And it does seem that people actually produce bodies rather than just posting witty comments on online.
Well, I brought it up, Nina, because Russia has the highest penetration of internet in the world. And we were talking a minute ago about the young people who seem to be the most loyal, those that belong to NASHI, the United Russia's Youth Party. This is a generation, of course, that grew up watching Putin's TV networks, and they're cynical, and I guess they're looking to buy patronage and protection. But my understanding is that unless the oil stays up, and it's quite possible there may be an attack on Iran, which would, of course, benefit Putin, but that seems to be the anchors of his regime, oil prices and the ability to brainwash via television. But he can't, the myth of upward social mobility that his young supporters are buying into, that's a myth, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what became, as of 2010, it really became very clear that it's a myth, because when he talks about stability, it really is stagnation. There's no upward mobility. There's always the same message. And my theory also is that in the last year or so, he also lost that image of a strong man that was so welcomed by all Russians, in fact, of all generations, because he was sort of a strong man who was going to lead Russia into the great future versus the decaying that West and faltering United States and whatnot. And he became too vain for that. I mean, there were too many pictures of him shirtless. There were too many incidents of him kissing dolphins or, I don't know, saving tigers or journalists or salvaging names. Anyway, it's every week, and also he had a facelift last year, and there was a whole debate of the Botox is at the facelift. He became very vain. He became Berlusconi, so to speak. And I think for a strong man ruler, you can't be Berlusconi. I mean, you can afford Berlusconi in Italy, but you really cannot afford Berlusconi in Russia of 9 time zones where it's dark and cold and natural resources run the game. And I think that another incredibly bad mistake that was made by his PR people and himself.
So, Nina Khrushcheva, the other, I'm not surprised, I suppose, but the other other report that comes out of the elections is that the communists seem to be the main beneficiaries. They've doubled their vote to around 20%. I find it sort of interesting in a way that, because, you know, one's reminded of, because of the charges of fraud and ballot stuffing involved in this election that prompted the Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to suggest that the election should be investigated, that they're rife with fraud. I'm reminded of Stalin's adage, you know, it's not a question of who votes, but who counts the votes. But it seems to me that given you've got this KGB incorporated kind of government run by Putin and the KGB type seem to be sort of protecting the boss from the people, I guess. It sort of, in a way, shows, doesn't it, that repression is, you know, in the West, they've always associated repression with communism, but now you have capitalist repression, right? Not unlike what they have in China.
Well, I mean, I think it's an incredible irony and just shows you how Russia is running in circles, has been running in circles throughout history. So it's despotism reforms, and coming back to despotism. I actually find it almost inconceivable that the communists are the second popular party after 75 years of communism. And, you know, talking about those leaders who run the communist party, like United Ukraine, talking about people who have not reformed. So we are trading. I mean, that is mind-boggling. It's just basically the option, one option is worse than another. There's no good option. Is that we're trading KGB Putin to the communist Zhuganov. I mean, that really tells you that Russia is not only in a crossroad, but basically in a foundation pit.
Well, what about the rest in between United Russia and the communists, the coalitions of the endangered species of liberals and social democrats?
Well, I mean, yeah, but we also have to remember that most of those liberals are the ones that were leftovers of the Yeltsin regime, and not that they were performing brilliantly then. So there's really not much choice going on, because the liberals are heavily mistrusted. I mean, I think the reason now the 10,000 people that came out, they didn't come out because the liberals called them, because they were just really, really insulted by Putin, who went really too far in completely disrespecting his nation, not because Nemtsov called them. So, I mean, Nemtsov announced the meeting, but, you know, not that Nemtsov is particularly greatly respected or another opposition leader, Mikhail Kasyanov, who was a prime minister under Yeltsin and slightly a bit under Putin, and his nickname was Misha 2%, so you can make any deal with him.
Right.
2% cutoff. So that is another problem, is that, and there is, you know, other people like Milov, for example, who are slightly new or fresh opposition, but these were the people that until a year ago were arguing that Medvedev is the greatest solution for Russia. I mean, talking about completely...
drinking the Kool-Aid, right.
President.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, the choices, I mean, ultimately the choice, as far as people are concerned, at least Putin says he's stable, but I honestly think that we just want the Putin that we like. We don't want the Putin... that is sort of Berlusconi, right? That is an insult to the strong man of Siberia or something like that. The strong Russian, bear, that is
right.
That is really an insult.
Yeah, bears don't have facelifts. So just in closing, and you know, how much then is the case of the Khodorkovsky in jail a litmus test for the rule of law? I mean, obviously, you know, that none of those billionaires are popular with the average Russian, but it is that the trial was pretty disgusting. What's your sense of whether that he'll ever be freed, or that you know, maybe in these next presidential elections he may make a concession to the West?
I mean, if Putin stays, he's not going to be freed, because Putin is a small man with a great revenge complex, and he's, you know, if he wanted to free Khodorkovsky, would have freed him by now, and Khodorkovsky is going to be sitting there. It's still around until 2017. So, I mean, no, there's no, I mean, and that's why Medvedev is such a disgrace, probably even more than Putin, is because he came in and said, oh, legal nihilism, we're going to amend all that, we're going to correct all that, and done nothing. And Khodorkovsky is an embarrassment for Russia more than, I don't know, I mean, it's Mikhail Bukharin's trial, probably,
sure,
of the same kind.
Well, Nina, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Nina Khrushcheva, who's a professor of the Graduate School of International Affairs at the New School and a senior fellow of the World Policy Institute. She's also an editor of and a contributor to Project Syndicate, the Association of Newspapers Around the World, and she serves as a deputy editor of the East European Constitutional Review at the NYU School of Law, and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the author of a new book, The Lost Khrushchev: A Family Journey into the Gulag of the Russian Mind. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking with two activists who today tried to fight the foreclosures of a home and support the repossession of a foreclosed home by its owner.
He said, "Fear me again. No, I'm your father. Remember that no one can breathe underwater."